Brian Dorries and Bill Irwin have just returned from Guantanamo Bay. They traveled there not to protest the war or the camp, but at the invitation of the Defense Department to stage readings of classical Greek plays for the military personnel who worked there. Brian Dorries is a writer, translator, director, and the founder of Theater of War, a project that uses these ancient plays as a catalyst to explore the experiences of the servicemen and their families. And Bill Irwin, who performed at the readings, is an actor who's appeared on Broadway in shows as diverse as Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf and Bye Bye Birdie. He came to prominence, of course, as a clown, the creator of works like Full Moon and Regard for Flight, and I'm very pleased to welcome them to our show.
Thank you so much.
Was this your first time at Guantanamo?
This was my second time at Guantanamo.
This is Brian and Bill.
My first time.
How much access did you have there?
Well, we were the guests of the Joint Task Force, and we were shown just about everything within the military installation there. We were given a tour of the detainee facility. It was a remarkable trip, Leonard.
What were your first impressions of it, Brian?
I think the most surprising aspect of Guantanamo Bay is how normal everything seems there. There's a mini mart, an outdoor movie theater, a tiki bar. It looks like any other military base and anywhere else in America.
Well, it's normal for the military aspect, but not so normal for the detainees.
Absolutely. I mean, having spent some time in super maximum security prisons with one of my projects, there are aspects of the facilities in which they live and reside that look like any other supermax prison in the United States. Not that that should be normal existence for anyone, but...
But this is both military and prison. So it's a kind of a mix, isn't it?
It's a total mix, and it's one of the most challenging, surprising, surreal places I've ever been.
Bill, did you go down there as a team?
We did. We went with Brian, our director and the creator of these projects that took us down there, and a team of four actors, one of whom had been down there with you before.
Brian O'Byrne.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. And young Marin Ireland, whom I've known since she was a child actor almost. And a wonderful young guy, Otto, and Otto's last name.
Asando.
An incredible actor whom I'd never met or worked with before. And there we were going toe-to-toe in front of these audiences.
And I mentioned that you went down there at the invitation of the Department of Defense. Did either of you have political motives? I mean, Bill, I know that you've associated yourself with a group called THAW, Theater Against War.
Right. You know, while we were down there doing our best to serve Brian's project, because it's an amazingly conceived project, we kept talking about how there were several wheels turning. One, there's the citizenship wheel, and you're trying to figure this out and take all this in and digest it and make moral and policy estimations in your head. There's also the actor's wheel going, because it's incredible raw material for an actor. Young Otto, this amazing young actor, he got the best General Nichols imitation going amongst all of us. He sort of picked it up immediately. And so a lot going on. We would often look at each other and realize it's easy to get into a daze here.
Although we can get a bit confused. Your group is Theater of War. The other group is right. Theater Against War. They both have words in common. But Theater of War has to do with all of the various plays that deal with war?
So the idea behind Theater of War is that ancient Greek tragedy was a form of storytelling by veterans for veterans. And as we look through that lens, these ancient plays seem to have been an ancient technology for helping veterans to reintegrate after they'd returned from war in between deployments.
And Sophocles had served in the Peloponnesian Wars.
Sophocles was
the father pretty much of Greek tragedy.
Sophocles was a general. He was elected general twice. He didn't get elected general in the ancient world from writing nice plays. Aeschylus, on his grave, it didn't say, here lies the greatest playwright in the Western world. It said, here lies a man who fought in the Battle of Marathon. It's impossible to separate from the ancient Greeks how highly militarized a democracy they actually were.
So are you mostly performing ancient Greek plays?
The projects that I and my producing partner Phyllis Kaufman are engaged with through Outside the Wire, our company, are mostly ancient plays, ancient Greek and Roman plays primarily. And we do that in order to provide the audiences we're trying to engage with some safety and distance. Each performance is followed by a community panel who comes out and responds in the moment from their guts to what they heard and saw in the plays that connected with their experiences, and then a town hall discussion.
So it's fascinating, Leonard, how quickly the famous actor visiting our and radio audience can't see, but I'm making little inverted commas with my fingers.
Quote, famous actor.
Yes, right. How quickly we become beside the point. We present this play with a rhythm and a drive that Brian directs us in. And
well, he's also done the translations, hasn't he?
They're his translations, and he knows every word, so he knows if you've made a little flub in your reading. But your job is to deliver this play with an immediacy. At one point, he looked at me and he said, "You're reading Philoctetes. You know, you really have to inject, you have to fill the emotion here so that it gives permission within the town hall that follows to feel emotion." And these are guys who are trained not to feel that. So good luck, actor.
Well, how accessible are these ancient Greek plays to the people you perform for?
Absolutely, like war dramas that could have been written yesterday. That was what struck
me. They get it immediately?
They do.
Because even among theater people, some of these plays are known as problem plays, aren't they?
Yeah, thank you. Those people who live lives of mythological proportions, who face life and death stakes, who have faced the darkest aspects of our humanity, they have no problem understanding or relating to ancient Greek plays. In fact, these are their stories.
One of my lines as Hephaestus in the Prometheus story is to say, you do your job, I'll do mine. I'm speaking to Kratos, one of the other demigods.
Guards.
One of the guards, yeah, right. And it resonated, I thought. There.
So part of what happens to actors is they say a line and they have no idea what's going to happen, and then they hear a gasp from the audience, so they get a laugh or they see somebody crying, and then they realize that these lines have a lot more relevance than just simply doing a good job performing in the play.
Exactly.
So is that what happened? Did the meaning of these plays change for you over time as you saw the reactions?
Well, certainly it did for me, and Brian's talked a lot about that over the course of how many military audiences?
We've done 158 performances for more than 35,000 service members and veterans all over the world. The first time I heard veterans responding to these ancient plays, it was as if a veil had been lifted. It was as if the plays were written in a code that I as a translator had no access to, that I needed the military to translate for me.
Well, don't these plays assume war as a natural state?
These plays are neither pro-war nor anti-war. They are trying to express the truth of the experience, the human experience of war. And if you're looking for something that celebrates the values of a warrior culture, look no further than ancient Greek tragedy. If you're looking for something that calls into question the brutality of war, look no further than people who've been to war relating their experiences to an ancient Greek play.
Well, the concept of war was central to the Greek identity, and even the poets were warriors. But I'm interested in that line that Bill quoted. Was that a literal translation?
Well,
are you adjusting some of this with your audience in mind?
Sometimes there's a little more Dorys than Aeschylus or Sophocles. I mean, I'll be the first to admit it. In one of the Theater of War plays, I replace an idiom about Ajax, who's this mighty warrior who's essentially has PTSD, and the idiom is about his mind being a tempestuous oceans or seas, and I talk about how he has the 1,000-yard stare. And sometimes I make big leaps like that, but I'm always just looking for an idiom that will translate 2,500 years later and land with our audience.
Well, when I first heard about this project, I assumed you were performing for detainees, but that wasn't the case.
We would love an opportunity to perform for everyone at Guantanamo, but the primary mission of our project, these two projects, is to serve to create a catalyst for dialogue amongst those who are serving the U.S. military.
Well, we just recently, right before you, we talked about the detainees being encouraged to read a business book. So I wonder how these plays might go over with them.
Well, a lot of the detainees are highly educated, highly opinionated, intelligent people, and I have no doubt it would be a rich discussion. I think there are a lot of taxpayers who might question the value of our performing for them, but given the opportunity, we would perform for anyone if we felt that it would do good. With regard to the guards, our feeling is if we help people look at the ethical decisions they make on a daily basis, and we help people to understand the stress they're under by way of these ancient Greek tragedies, and to express their emotions, it'll help inform the decisions they have down the road to make. It'll make an impact on the way that they conduct themselves in these highly stressful situations.
Here's a tiny bit of background, Leonard, on the place down there. You know, Guantanamo has been a naval installation since 1903, and back in the day before the detention facility, it was a controversial place as a as an outpost of American empire. But those people who, in military parlance, are strictly assigned to NAVSTAH, that's Naval Station. You get the language after a while. Yeah, I'm with NAVSTAH. They have actually not a bad posting in many ways. It's a nice school, nice place to raise kids. Some people spend 2-3 years there in a Navy posting and have a nice life. The people we talked to in the Joint Task Force who are charged with running the detention center, we didn't talk to anybody who wasn't counting the days because it is a tough gig. It's a tough assignment.
Mm. Well, do you know if any of these plays are taught at the military academies?
The military, the one way into the military when I started the project in 2008 was that most of the military brass had at some point come into contact with Thucydides and Herodotus and their war strategy courses. I don't think many of them thought of Sophocles as a warrior. And that's part of my secondary mission of taking Sophocles out, not just to the military, but to civilian communities with this new lens.
Well, Prometheus Bound is what you're performing. Is that a military play?
In the sense that all of the plays were performed during a century that saw 80 years of war and were performed for 17,000 citizen soldiers seated in an outdoor amphitheater, we think according to tribe, which was their military unit with the general sitting in the front and the hoplite soldiers in the back. It's really hard to extract the military from ancient Greek drama. It also deals with hierarchy as a play, and it's about a double agent. It's about someone who's traded on his own family, the Titans, to serve the Olympians, who then commits a political crime in order to subvert the order of a new ruler.
But for the better good of all.
For the better good of man, but this is a play about gods.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a play about political power and hierarchy. It's a play about what happens when people are ordered to do things that go against the grain of their moral compass, but when they've sworn an oath to uphold the law or a duty, then they have to wrestle with these really difficult ethical issues. We perform in prisons the same play for corrections officers, caseworkers, psychologists, and we have a very rich dialogue about the same set of issues we heard down in Guantanamo.
So when you talk to these people, whether it's people in the military or prison guards, how do they relate to Prometheus?
Well, one of my favorite quotes is one that Brian gives us from an earlier outing with this project in Missouri.
Yeah, sure. In the Supermax.
Yeah, one of the corrections officers said, "I'm Prometheus."
Well, but Prometheus is a prisoner. See themselves as a prisoner?
I'm imprisoned by this duty. And there are a lot of people down at Guantanamo who feel that they are in a detention situation where the eyes of the world are on things to the point where they really can't even exert control mechanisms like they might in another detention setting.
Yeah.
My guests are Tony Award-winning actor Bill Irwin and Brian Dorries, the artistic director of Outside the Wire. They just recently made a trip to Guantanamo Bay and are talking about how theater can address some of the issues that guards and you also deal with other kinds of people as well, because you don't only go down to Guantanamo with these things.
All of our projects are really uplifting, Leonard. We have addiction, war, torture, and end of life issues, and those are some of the core issues we try to address through theater. The methodology is always the same, and the idea is that once the actors have taken the risk of performing ancient stories for these audiences, the audiences will then take the risk of sharing their personal stories.
But not always ancient, because you use Eugene O'Neill, although of all the modern playwrights, Eugene O'Neill is the one who most drew upon Greek sources.
Heavily influenced by Aeschylus, and we know from Mourning Becomes Electra and many of his other plays as well, a real lover of the Greeks. It's really the blunt force instrument of tragedy that we use. In our Ajax, the play in Theater of War, Ajax is a mighty warrior who kills himself, and it doesn't have a happy ending. Some people could criticize us and Sophocles for performing a suicide for soldiers, but by naming it, by acknowledging it, by putting it out in the open, by giving vocabulary to it, people are able to then relate their struggles to a 2,500-year-old story.
Now, Bill, why were you willing to take time off from your career to do something like this?
Well, you know, as you get further down the road of life and you accrue more life chapters in a so-called life in the theater, what you find, or at least what I find, is that what I'm really looking to do is be involved in work that is engaging of the craft that I've spent my life developing, that is returns to basic question of what is acting? What is theater? What am I doing here? When you get to those basic questions, that informs any work you might do. If I had a TV job tomorrow, and boy, would the banker who holds my mortgage be happy to hear it, I would be informed by having the work would be informed by having come back to these basic questions. I don't think you've had any actors not jump at the chance, am I right?
No, but I will say that we were delighted that Bill could come with us to Guantanamo. We weren't going to just take anyone down to a high-risk mission like that where people had to really be on their best game.
I keep on coming back to some of the plots of these plays and wondering how they work out. Doesn't Ajax first plan to kill his superior officers?
It's ripped from the headlines today. Ajax slips into a depression after sustaining a psychological injury, attempts to kill his commanding officers after being betrayed by them. Athena, goddess of war, blinds him with madness, and he ends up killing animals. And when he wakes from this rage, he discovers he shamed himself, his family, and consumed by that shame, he takes his own life against the pleading of his own family.
Gee, that must go over really well with the prison guards.
Well, people, you know, all of the prison guard, almost all of the guards at Guantanamo and all of the places we perform have deployed multiple times. We had the general ask the audience to raise their hand. How many times have you deployed? One guy said, I've deployed 8 times in the audience. So after having deployed, having faced, quote unquote, their enemy, they now find themselves with an assignment that I think causes them to stay up at night for a number of reasons.
So following the play, how do you begin the conversation with the audience?
This is the art. This is Brian's art.
Now, before we get to that, Brian, I'm curious about how people come to where they come to.
Yeah.
Did you start off your interest in theater in this way, or did you think that you were going to direct plays and be off Broadway and then move on to Broadway?
Well, I still have all those aspirations, but, I had a series of life-changing experiences in my 20s. I'm now in my mid-30s, where I was transformed from being simply a guy who wanted to direct his own translations of ancient Greek plays because he believed that there should be a wider audience for these plays, that they're as American as Shakespeare, that they're core to our values, and that they deserve to be performed.
And they're also the source of Western theater, aren't they?
Absolutely. And we borrow everything else from the Greeks. Why wouldn't we, center our attention on the plays? I went from being a person who was asking, how do I do this? How do I perform them in a way? How do I write translations that seem real to audiences? To for whom is the story being told?
Well, but it is interesting that the plays that do get produced the most, like Medea.
Sure.
And also, Lysistrata.
Yeah.
Maybe Oedipus, right?
Sure.
They're not the war plays.
They're not the war plays.
They're the psychological plays.
99% of this country did not deploy to Iraq and Afghanistan. So more than 99% of the Greeks watching these plays did deploy. When Aeschylus wrote the Oresteia, Athens was at war on 6 fronts. We're kind of turning the tables by saying, for whom is the story told? If we're telling it for veterans, then we're going to empower them to be the ones to tell us what these stories are really about. So I bring Bill in, and I say in rehearsal, I'm going to say some things that, hopefully will be helpful to you. I've done this 157 times. But when you hear what the audience says about the lines that you spoke, it will inform the way you perform. That's where the real direction comes from. This is a different relationship between theater and audience.
So yes. I interrupted you. I asked you what's the process? You read these things, right?
And like Bill, a radio play, yeah.
And Bill, since you are so physical an actor, I wonder whether a lot of your art isn't lost in just
reading
something.
It's a really visceral craft of reading. It's not a laid-back sort of old Mercury Theater paced thing. Brian wants these things at a certain pitch, at a certain intensity, and a certain speed. I had a mixed outing as an actor, I have to say. I'm going to do my tongue twisters more assiduously next time before I'm in one of Brian's projects. Because you're working at a pitch, you're trying to get these things going. Every character I read, actually, spoke seethingly of the generals and of Odysseus. And like I say, it's a war drama that feels very, very contemporary.
But when you're playing Prometheus, do you Are you really bound?
I didn't read Prometheus. Brian O'Byrne read Prometheus. But I read Hephaestus, who didn't want to be there and didn't want to be pounding the stakes around my fellow god and family member, Prometheus.
And Brian held his arms behind his back when he wasn't turning the pages of his script. A simple gesture like that, we discovered in rehearsal, can actually be defiant and powerful and conveys a rebellion to the audience that if we'd staged it with props, might get lost in the mix.
So I'm going to – I have interrupted you twice, and I know that the audience is going to really get on my tail. So let me ask the question one more time. Following the play, how do you begin the conversation with the audience?
So the way we follow the play is that we immediately get the actors out of the way. And with all due respect to what actors do, the worst thing that could happen for our type of theater is what happens in many theaters today, the quote-unquote talk back, where the actors come back out and they're asked relatively banal questions about what they were thinking when they performed the play.
And how do you remember all the lines?
Yeah, right, exactly. Right. So Bill's had his share of those. So we immediately get them out of the way. We don't even do a curtain call. They just leave. And then immediately, before they've even gotten to the floor, we have five members of the community who bravely agreed to come up and respond in the moment from their guts to what they heard that connected with their experiences. They speak for 2 or 3 minutes apiece, not long, sometimes just stammering or conveying an emotion, not even being able at first to even process what they just saw. And then I turn out to the audience, and the military now calls me the Phil Donahue meets P.T. Barnum of ancient Greek tragedy. But I then go out into the audience with a microphone, and I ask a series of questions like, why do you think Sophocles wrote this play? And what people say always defies our expectations.
And
is your audience mixed, officers and
absolutely.
Microphile?
We performed for the highest level of the DOD, the Pentagon, to special forces, SEAL teams, to infantry. It's the best audience is a mixed audience with spouses and other caregivers present.
Although I might, as a PFC, be a little afraid to express my opinion about Ajax trying to kill his commanding officer.
Well, that's the best thing about this project. It was a total revelation to me. Theater has the capacity to dissolve hierarchy. So for a matter of seconds, maybe a matter of minutes, the private, the PFC, can say exactly what's on his mind in front of the four-star general. We had a four-star general at our last performance, and people were saying, I thought, pretty politically contentious, powerful things.
Well, we don't have any time left, but I understand that you have a grant to train other theatrical companies to do this kind of work?
We got a wonderful grant from a Greek cultural foundation. We're partnering with 13 theaters across the country, including Classical Theater of Harlem. We'll be performing there August 15th and 22nd, the Audubon Ballroom. It's open to the public this summer in New York City. We'll be all over the country for mixed civilian-military audiences trying to bridge the gap in our culture.
And I want to thank the two of you for being on our show, Brian Durries, the artistic director of Outside the Wire, and Bill Irwin, the Tony Award-winning actor. It's been a real pleasure having you on our show today.
Thanks, Leonard.
Thank you so much for having us.